My dudes, have you been left home alone this holiday season? Well, so has Kevin McAllister. Let's get into it.
Kevin!
Yes, that's correct. Home Alone is our movie this time around. Are you excited? Get real excited for some Kevin McAllister shenanigans. I think I kind of forgot how much I adore this movie. This isn't one that I haven't watched in a long ass time, like a lot of my other movies, most of them, if not all. But I also hadn't watched it in a few years because there's something about it I just didn't want to revisit until this year. And it was quite pleasant. I enjoyed myself watching this movie. I thought I liked the second one more. I don't know why. I thought I did. I think I was wrong. Yeah. At least I've changed my mind. Yeah. We're gonna do a little bit of our movie facts, go over the cast and such before we get into our recap on this holiday season. This episode should be coming out on Christmas Day, potentially Christmas Eve. So happy Christmas Eve. Or Merry Christmas. Happy Holidays. I don't know why I said happy. Whatever. Well, here we are. I said it anyway. Okay. Home Alone. Tiz came out in 1990. It was directed by Chris Columbus, who we saw directing. We didn't see, but who directed Jingle All the Way, my last episode. And I made some. Did he direct or he do something else? Whatever. His name was on the project. And I made some cringy joke that keeps me awake at night about his name. So I'm not going to do that again. I'm just telling you that I was cringing at myself, and I still am. It was also written and produced by John Hughes, music by John Williams, and it was produced by, well, the production companies, 20th Century Fox and Hughes Entertainment. Our cast, none other than the name we all know. If you don't, the fuck? Macaulay Culkin as Kevin McAllister. Catherine O'Hara is here. I do adore Miss Catherine O'Hara, as you know, because I make a decent amount of Schitt's Creek references, and sometimes they're Moira, sometimes they're not, but a lot of times they're Moira, because she's fucking amazing. Fabulous, darling. Fabulous. I mean, she's done a lot more than Schitt's Creek in this movie, but anyways, Catherine O'Hara as Kate McAllister, Kevin's mom. John Hurd plays Peter McAllister, Kevin's father. Angela Goethals plays Lenny McAllister, Kevin's older sister. There's a lot of sisters. I almost said sons, which is correct, but in this sense, brothers, because we're referring to Kevin, and cousins. So I'm not going over every single one of them, but kind of the, you know, his actual siblings. So anyways, Devin Rattray plays Buzz McAllister, Kevin's oldest brother. Michael C. Marona plays Jeff McAllister, Kevin's older brother. They're all his older brother. I don't know why I'm saying older.
He's the youngest. Kevin is, so it's redundant.
Hilary Wolf plays Megan McAllister, Kevin's sister. Kieran Culkin, yes, it's another Culkin in the movie, and they are actual brothers in real life. Macaulay Culkin has a lot of siblings, two of which I believe have passed away tragically, so that's awful. But he has a lot of siblings, I think 7 in total. It's just ironic because in the movie, same. So yes, Kieran Culkin plays Fuller McAllister, Kevin's youngest cousin in the film. Jerry, I don't know how to say this last name. It's probably just how it looks, but Baman plays Uncle Frank McAllister. Joe Pesci, hello Joe, plays Harry Lime. Daniel Stern, I keep on wanting, every time I read that name, I want to say Danielle. I don't know why. Clearly Daniel. Daniel Stern plays Marv Merchants. Robert Blossom plays Old Man Marley, Kevin's creepy, kind of elusive and infamous, potentially murderer neighbor. John Candy. Yes, we have a brief appearance from John Candy in this film. For some reason, that always escapes my attention, which is strange to me because I love that. Anyways, John Candy plays Gus Polinski, and Larry Hankin plays Officer Larry Balzac. That is his last name. I'm not making it up. All right, so I got a few movie facts here for you guys. I thought these were pretty fun. If you don't, I mean, it is what it is. As I already said, Kieran Culkin is Macaulay Culkin's younger brother, and this movie is actually his first acting credit. So he doesn't have any lines in this film. He's just there. He's the one that will wet the bed if he has anything to drink after a certain time of the day. It reminds me of a gremlin in a sense, except with wetting the bed and not multiplying. So John Hughes, who wrote the script for this movie, he also wrote a lot of other movies you might recognize, including The Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink, and 16 Candles. He wrote the first draft of Home Alone in just 9 days. In an interview for Time magazine in 1990, Mr. Hughes said, "I was going on vacation and making a list of everything I didn't want to forget. I thought, well, I better not forget my kids. And then I thought, what if I left my 10-year-old son at home? What would he do?" And that's where it started. Okay, so a little bit of John Candy here. John Candy facts. I adore this. He came on set ready to improvise. He was on set for a day, just one day, because he doesn't have a ton of screen time in this movie. And even though he has limited screen time, he's hilarious, particularly the funeral parlor story I will play a clip of later on. It was said, quote, that was improvised at 4:30 in the morning and that everyone on set could barely keep a straight face just listening to John. What a cute little memory. Ooh. Just about everything except for John and one or two things was, on script for this movie. But the director, Chris Columbus, he had his own little addition, that being the conversation between Kevin and Marley in the church. So the church was always in the script, but that, and I am going to go into this conversation more again once we get to the recap, because it's one of my favorite scenes in this movie, the conversation that Kevin ends up having between himself and old man Marley. Anyways, but in a quote from Chris Columbus, he said, quote, "I added the moment when Marley talked about not being able to see his granddaughter. I also added the very end of the movie when Kevin sees that Marley is reunited with his granddaughter. That is probably my proudest addition to this movie." Yeah. Yes. I could not agree more, honestly. I think it adds a more meaningful touch to the story outside of the comedy aspect of it, because the comedy's great. The comedy's there. It's everywhere. Snowing comedy in this Christmas extravaganza that is Home Alone. But these moments actually teach you something and show, I don't know, I guess a more meaningful expression of Christmas time. Alrighty, let's get into some facts about the movie within the movie, Angels with Filthy Souls. Okay, so everyone, if you don't know this movie, none of this makes sense right now, but it will if you continue listening. However, the movie within the movie part of this, Angels with Filthy Souls, it's the movie that Kevin's uncle says he's not allowed to watch. And in the beginning of the film, you even hear his mom, Kate, say, "If Uncle Frank says you can't watch it, then you definitely can't watch it." Because Uncle Frank also, doesn't give a fuck. So if he's saying you can't watch it, then she's like, oh, then it must be bad. So a lot of people thought that that was a real film. No, that was filmed specifically for Home Alone. And the way it's shot kind of, it has some interesting facts behind it that I wanted to share. So in a quote from an article from Insider Mag with Chris Columbus, he said, "Home Alone is one of the last films shot with an old carbon arc lighting system that was popular back in the 1940s through the 1960s for Technicolor films. They used the same technique for Angels with Filthy Souls, which was inspired by the 1938 James Cagney gangster film Angels with Dirty Faces." So Angels with Filthy Souls was shot in one day on the final test day before principal photography officially began on Home Alone. It was Julio Macat, sorry if I'm saying that wrong, director of photography, who persuaded, again, our director, Chris Columbus, to shoot the sequence using the techniques and black and white negative film stock of movies from the 40s. It is definitely a film noir type, and I love film noir. I know I've said that before, but it definitely has that key of film noir to it and murder. So, gangster shit. Production designer John Muto said, quote, "The high key lighting, high contrast aesthetic would evoke a cross between film noir and the really crazy stuff you see in early television, like Playhouse 90 or One Step Behind," which I, end quote. I don't know the reference. I don't know Playhouse 90 or One Step Beyond. Oh, I think it's a Behind. It's Beyond. But I still wanted to share that quote. Anyway, Angels with Filthy Souls, there is a pretty cool article that I found that's all about just that part of this film. That will be in the show notes for you guys if you want to check it out. I find it interesting. If you don't, that's fine. But it's there for you if you would like to partake in reading it. Okay, y'all know I love a good house fact. date. So here we go. The large red brick colonial style mansion that the McAllister family lives in was perfect for that aim, but it was mainly used for exterior shots. Most of the interior scenes for the home were built on a soundstage that the production crew created, of course, in an abandoned gymnasium in a high school, a New Trier High School in Winnetoka, Illinois. So the movie takes place in Chicago. A lot of the filming was done in Illinois, something that you see a lot in John Hughes movies and such. Lots of Chicago-based things. The location became a favorite of Hughes, and it was the same high school featured in The Breakfast Club and Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Uncle Buck. Okay, so John Williams, the composer behind the scores for Jaws, E.T., and Star Wars, he was sent a rough cut of the finished film. They wanted to get him to do the music. They knew it was going to be a long shot, but, you know, shoot your shot, right? So he was sent that rough cut of the finished film, and he loved it, so he agreed to do the score, including the movie's signature song, Somewhere in My Memory. Home Alone's music was nominated for both Best Original Song and Best Original Score at the 63rd Academy Awards in 1991. They didn't win. I think something with Madonna won. Listen, I don't know if it's controversial, but I just don't like Madonna. Would you think I would? Because I love Lady Gaga, and Lady Gaga does take a lot of inspiration from Madonna, but she also takes a lot of inspiration from David Bowie and Elton John, Queen. So, you know, it's not just Madonna. But anyways, there's something about Madonna I don't fucking like. It just is what it is. My point is, they didn't win, but they were nominated. And honestly, the score for this movie, John Williams must be fucking brilliant, because I've said it before, I'll say it again, a score can make or break a film. A good score can elevate the fuck out of a film, and this one just does. All right, last fact, and then we're gonna move into the film recap portion of this episode. Okay, the script called for a, in quotes, picture-perfect snowfall for the mother and son reunion scene at the very end of the film. So production had planned ahead of time to drop everything if and when it began snowing. When they were filming this, it was unseasonably warm that year. It was filmed in winter. It's actually filmed in February of, was it filmed in February of 1990? And then it came out in November that year, I believe. Anyway, so they weren't having too much luck on the snow front, and they feared that they might not even have enough money in the budget to produce enough fake falling snow. But a perfect snowfall began on the second day of shooting, and thus the Christmas movie's final scene was practically filmed first on Valentine's Day. What? I'm not even a fan of Valentine's Day, but it feels like a good omen. Also, I don't know how actors and actresses do that, because flipping around, filming scenes like that, this is why it's not my job and never could be, because that, I don't know if I could do that. I guess it's part of your training and you get used to it, but for me,
I don't know. I just don't think I could.
Even just hearing the music from the opening title, you just, you know, oh shit, it's Kevin. It's Kevin time. It's Home Alone time. Gather round, children near and far. It's time for Kevin's fun house. That sounded weird, but I enjoyed it. Okay, so it opens at the McAllister house. Again, that big, grand, colonial, brick-looking thing. The inside has all of the 90s wallpaper that you could imagine. All these, those, I don't even know how to describe the greens and, like, reds and the cream. Yeah. The countertops are this deep green, wide tile with, like, the, you know, the grout in the between it that you just feel like is always dirty, but it looks pristine. It's so 90s. I can't even stand it, but I love it. So, yes, opens at the McAllister house with Harry pretending to be a cop. Harry is, again, played by Joe Pesci. He's one of the Wet Bandits, one half of the Wet Bandits, the shorter half. I love Joe Pesci. It's not a slight to his height. Anyways, but he's there as a fake cop trying to get someone's attention, but failing.
Miss, young lady, excuse me, girls. Hey, hey, excuse me, girls. Girls,
take the witches!
Hey,
Tracy,
hey,
Tracy,
hey,
come on,
excuse me,
ma'am, come on down here,
ma'am, hi, hey, son,
I just bought that.
Big fella, hey, little guy, little guy.
There are people everywhere in this house, but the kid to adult ratio is in favor of the kids. We see Kate, Catherine O'Hara, on the phone in her bedroom kind of packing when our dear Kevin comes in, interrupting without a kid care in the world.
Mom, Uncle Frank won't let me watch the movie, but the big kids can. Why can't I?
Kevin, I'm on the phone. When do you come back?
Not till then. It's not even rated R. He's just being a jerk.
Kevin, if Uncle Frank says no, then it must be really bad. No, we're not bringing the dog. Put it in the kennel for the... Hey, 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 get off. Kevin, out of the room.
Hang up the phone and make me, why don't you?
Kate is trying to get him out of there so she can pack and have her conversation. Fuck, when Kevin says, hang up the phone and make me, why don't you? I love that line. It's obnoxious and you kind of want to flick him in the nose. Maybe the eye lid. But the way he delivers it, this kid. Then his dad, he's popping in out of the bathroom, also bothering Kate while she's on the phone. Everyone stop bothering Kate while she's on the phone. It is rude. Let her have a fucking moment, okay? Then we learn that Kevin's been in the garage again where he's not supposed to be, making ornaments out of fish hooks, which he's not supposed to do.
Didn't we talk about that?
Did I burn down the joint? I don't think so. I was making ornaments out of fish hooks.
My new fish hooks?
I can make ornaments out of the old ones with dry worm guts stuck on them.
Then Kevin's told to pack his suitcase, and the kid basically goes into crisis mode over it. I can't say I don't understand him in this moment. He's never done that. He doesn't even understand what to pack. Listen, I wish it was that way, but they need some guidance. All right. It's not unreasonable for him to be like, what do I pack, though? I think he's supposed to be 8. He looks younger than that. I would have said 6 or 7 based on his height and weight. But obviously, he's just a smaller kid. So I'm fucking wrong. And oftentimes, assuming makes you a horse's ass. Harry, the fake cop, is still there. He's still looking for an adult, but there seems to not be one to find. Okay, so Kevin's siblings are raging on him for not knowing how to pack his bags for fucking Paris, Europe. Literally, they're going out of the country. In my little kid brain, that would have given me more of a conundrum, and I probably would have packed the wrong things or not enough. Why am I going off on this? Then he's told he has to sleep on the hide-a-bed with Fuller. Okay, I said it before, but Fuller has issues with wetting the bed, and Kevin knows that, and he's like, bitch, I am not dealing with this. This is not fair. There's so many people in this house right now. It sounds like he's been kicked out of his room. That was one thing I was always curious about. I'm like, where is Kevin's actual room? Because he's sent to sleep in the attic, which is kind of more like a third floor, but I referred to it as the attic. I'm going to keep referring it to it as the attic in my... Sorry, I started referring it to as the attic in my notes. I heard it in the movie called The Attic, the third floor. There is a legit staircase to it that you don't have to pull out of the ceiling. It's got a door, but it's attic-y. He's been banished to sleep there, and I've always kind of wondered, where's Kevin's actual bedroom and what does it look like? Kevin has had it, and I think he feels like no one cares about him in a house that's crawling with a shit ton of people, and he expresses it like many other 8-year-olds would.
This house is so full of people, it makes me sick. When I grow up and get married, I'm living alone. Did you hear me? I'm living alone! I'm living alone!
It's kid shit. Okay, we meet Buzz and his spider. And I know I've said before that spiders don't bother me as much as they used to. But this, I'm only going to say it once because I couldn't even type it in my notes more than once. It's the tarantula. It's not for me. Mm-mm. This is too much for me. I'm not that healed, all right? Not that healed. I'm just going to refer to it as the big bad spider from here on out. A spider or big bad spider, whenever it pops up for its little sayings, all right? Oh, God. I just picture it on the stairs later in the movie because it gets loose. Oh, my God. And there's like a close-up shot. Sorry. So Buzz is a creep teenager who seems to really not like his little brother, which is fine. You know, again, it's kid shit, sibling shit. Or maybe he does, and he just doesn't know how to show affection because gestures to fucked up patriarchal social standards that encourages young boys and men to suppress emotions as if emotions are gendered. That whole thing. Anyways, Kevin comes in asking to sleep in his room.
Don't you know how to knock, phlegmwad?
Can I sleep in your room? I don't want to sleep on the hide-a-bed with Fuller. If he has something to drink, he'll wet the bed.
I wouldn't let you sleep in my room if you're growing on my ass.
Ah, and now we are introduced to the tale of old man Marley, their neighbor.
You ever heard of South Bend Shovel Slam?
No.
That's him. Back in 58, he murdered his whole family and half the people on his block with the snow shovel. Been hiding out in this neighborhood ever since.
Well, if he's a shovel slayer, how come the cops don't arrest him?
Not enough evidence to convict. They never found the bodies. But everyone around here knows he did it. Now it'll just be a matter of time before he does it again.
Buzz tells his tall tale, but Buzz is full of all the shit. Old Man Marley is going to crop up, again, so don't forget about him, all right? He's an important part of this movie. Back downstairs, Harry the fake cop is still there. Guys, he's casing the house.
Frank, remember to use the red plastic.
Hi. Are you Mr. McAllister?
Yeah.
The Mr. McAllister who lives here?
Yes.
Oh, good, because somebody owes me $122.50.
I'd like a word with you, sir.
Am I under arrest or something?
No. It's Christmas time. There's always a lot of burglaries around the holidays. So we're just checking the neighborhood to see if everyone's taking the proper precautions. That's all.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have automatic timers for our lights, locks for our doors. That's about as well as anybody can do these days, right? Did you get some eggnog or something like that?
Come on, Deb.
My dudes. He's casing the house. And then, Peter, dear Kevin's father, offers him eggnog. Peter, my dude, he's casing the house. Don't offer him your eggnog. All right, so at this point, pizza's been delivered. They're supposed to be flying out the next morning for Paris. So, you know, there's a shit ton of people here. Cousins, Uncle Frank, and... who the woman he's married to. She's such a sweet woman. I don't know how she puts up with Frank, but I like her. I just can't remember her name.
Sorry.
And all of his cousins, his siblings, which is already a ton. So they're all sitting down to eat their pizza. The pizza guy has now joined Harry, the cop, in the foyer waiting to be paid. While in the kitchen, Kevin comes down looking for cheese pizza. He only wants the cheese pizza. He doesn't like all the shit on it. That's fine. That is fine. Okay, nothing wrong with that. His family seems to think everything that he does is annoying, though. So the fact that he only wants the cheese pizza, he doesn't want the pizza where you have to take all the shit off, which, you know, I feel like these types of things always bother me because, one, it actually annoys me to my soul when people call other people picky eaters because they don't have the same preferences. And I kind of get a little, I feel like that happened to me a kid as well because of all my sensory issues. And also some things I just don't want to fucking eat. It doesn't look appetizing. It doesn't sound appetizing. And then it stresses me out and it causes a sensory overload within me. When other people get on other people for being a supposed, you know, picky eater because they don't have the same preferences, even if they're a kid, it just pisses me off. And apparently it does it in movie form as well. Again, Kevin comes looking for his cheese pizza. It's all gone. They ordered so much pizza, but it's already all gone. Buzz has been stuffing it in his face, disgustingly. Buzz! Also, his hair is so tall. Like, it's actually just all standing up straight, as if he... If this was the days of the Jersey Shore, this would make more sense to me. But it's not. It's 1990. And I guess, I don't know, maybe this is where Polly from Jersey Shore got his inspo for his every follicle standing straight up and it's just at attention with gel. Buzz says if he wants some, someone's going to have to barf it up. At the same time, Feller's chugging Pepsi. The look on this kid's face as he downs the Pepsi, the double eyebrow raise. Dude knows what he's doing and he doesn't care.
Fuller, go easy on the Pepsi.
I think it's also even funnier knowing that it's Macaulay Culkin's actual little brother. And I'm like, that's how this happened. This is how that face landed because it's an actual sibling, I don't care face. And nailed it. Then Buzz starts to heave like he's gonna hurl. That's when Kevin loses it and bull rams into him, knocking him into the various solo cups full of milk, spilling them all over the airline tickets on the counter. Kevin's just so happens to get tossed in the trash as the spilled milk is being napkined up. Basically, in this moment, everyone turns on him. Every single one of them goes silent and is staring him down like they're about to sacrifice him.
He started it. He ate my pizza on purpose. He knows I ate sausage and olives and
look
onions
what you did, you little jerk.
Some of this, again, is kid shit, but he's also acting out, and kids act out for a reason, right? No one seems to care what the reason is or that they might be a part of that reason. They're just, I don't know, isolating him. So anyways, Kate goes to drag him upstairs. But first she stops to pay the pizza guy $125. And then the fake cop Harry is still there. So she has a quick chat with Harry, who is just clearly casing the house. But they're so, every adult that has talked to this dude is just so oblivious that this is weird. It's weird that he's just like, oh, just check it on the neighborhood. Make sure you all have security systems. What? Cops don't do that. Harry was still there because even though he'd talked to Peter, Kevin's dad, Peter didn't really give him enough detail to case the joint efficiently. But Kate does. So at the door to the attic, Kate is scolding Kevin. He feels neglected, but she doesn't think that's valid. She's mostly only seeing her frustration and isn't able to see through his 8-year-old way of communication. Kevin says again that he doesn't want to sleep with Fuller because he'll pee all over him. And you see the sympathy kind of slide over her face and she's like, okay, you know what? You're right. She didn't say you're right, but I wish she did. She says that Fuller will sleep somewhere else, that Kevin still has to sleep upstairs, and he's not happy with that. This is the part where he's like, I wish my family would disappear.
Everyone in this family hates me.
Then maybe you should ask Santa for a new family.
I don't want a new family. I don't want any family. Families suck.
Just stay up there. I don't want to see you again for the rest of the night.
I don't want to see you again for the rest of my whole life. And I don't want to see anybody else either.
I hope you don't mean that. You'd feel pretty sad if you woke up tomorrow morning and you didn't have a family.
No, I wouldn't.
Then say it again. Maybe it'll happen.
Oh, Kevin, your wish is about to come true.
I wish they would all just disappear.
During the night, it gets stormy and the power lines get knocked out, ensuring that nobody's alarms go off in the morning, and they oversleep. As they are in a mad dash to get going, some annoying neighbor kid from across the street, the Murphy's house, comes over and he's asking a million questions of the dudes driving the airport shuttle vans who are outside waiting for everyone, right? So eventually they come out, all the kids, and the eldest is doing a head count for Kate. And because this little neighbor kid is rifling through that, he's literally rifling through their stuff, I want to drag this child out of the van because I can't stand it. I can't stand it. His intrusiveness and just, he seems to just get away with this shit. I can't. So because he's doing that, he fucks up the head count and they think that they have all of said children. You know, 12, I think. We also learn that the phone lines are going to be out for a few days. It's going to take a little while to fix. The electric company guy is telling Kate this as she gets in the van. But listen, they even say that their flight's supposed to take off in like 45 minutes. I don't know how far they live from the airport. I guess it was 1990 and going through airport security was just maybe faster. But again, I'm like, y'all, I would have just been like, well, I guess we're going later. I guess we're missing our flight. But no. They make their mad dash to catch their flight.
Out of all the rainbows, you know you're the mastermind. Run, run, Rudolph. Randolph ain't too far behind. Run, run, Rudolph. Santa's gotta make it to town.
They make it onto their flight. As Kate is taking her seat, she says, I hope we didn't forget anything. Girl, you forgot a whole ass human. At home, Kevin emerges from the attic room to a silent house. Confused, still in the dregs of kid sleep, his bed hair is hilarious. He's looking around the house, calling out for everyone. He even checks the basement. Kevin hates the basement. He's got a thing with the basement. They don't get along. It's not copacetic. Anyways, he sees the cars in the garage and takes that as confirmation that they didn't leave for the airport, which leaves him with the only conclusion possible.
I made my family disappear.
And so, level one of being home alone begins. A good ass time. Dear Kev goes through Buzz's stuff. He finds a Playboy and says,
no clothes from anybody. Sickening.
I love when he says this. He makes himself a giant ice cream sundae and watches the movie Uncle Frank had just told him the night before he couldn't watch, Angels with Filthy Souls.
What do you mean?
Guys, I'm eating junk and watching rubbish. You better come out and stop me.
I do have to fast forward this part a bit because the mouth sounds when he's eating his giant ice cream sundae, that's just this gargantuan, disgusting thing to me. Also, this is the part where I started to notice the placement of things that are being advertised in the movie. I'm assuming this movie had a much smaller budget than the second one, for example. But you see a lot of Pepsi. And then there's the chip bag on the little side table next to him that's a Frito-Lay's. It's like Crunch Gators or something, which I thought was hilarious. I'd never noticed that before. But it's a Frito-Lay's bag. And the Pepsi, you can clearly see these things. And the Pepsi was already kind of clear, but I don't know. I'm pointing it out because that's the first time I've ever really paid attention to it. And I'm just wondering, does that actually get people to consume those things? I mean, do sales actually, I guess I could easily look this up, but like, does that actually work? Because to me, I don't notice it. And if I do, it gives me a little bit of an ick. Like, for example, with Hocus Pocus 2, there was a lot of that kind of product messaging in it, especially with Walgreens, which that I did notice. Like, it's definitely noticed that. A lot of it went over my head. And I don't know, is that like a neurodivergent thing to do? I'm really not sure. Anyways, back on Kevin's family's international flight, Kate is still plagued by a nagging feeling that she's forgotten something. Peter's trying to help her by confirming that, yes, they locked up and actually, yes, he did forget to close the garage door and that must be what is bothering her. But she says, no, that's not it. It's something else.
No, that's not it.
What else could we be forgetting?
Kevin! Kate goes into a sort of shock here, as one does when they forget their young child home alone and they're on an international flight to Paris, France. They're still in the air and there really isn't anything they can do from the fucking sky, you know? I really don't like Uncle Frank's character because he pisses me off with his self-righteous obtuse maleness. And you see it a little bit here. Uncle Frank has some very unhelpful words.
What kind of mother am I?
If it makes you feel any better, I forgot my reading classes.
He's basically a selfish prick in every scene he's in, right? This isn't even him just being awkward. He just cares much more about himself than anyone else. We see Marv and Harry, again, the wet bandits, gloating over how well they cased the neighborhood.
And that's the one, Marv, and that's the silver tuna.
Oh, it's very G.
Gee, huh? It's loaded. It's got lots of top flight goods. Stereos, VCRs.
Toys?
Probably looking at some very fine jewelry. Possible cash hoard. Odd marketable securities.
Okay, I didn't register before part of what Harry says here. Odd marketable securities. I was like, what the actual fuck is that? And I actually looked it up, surprise, surprise, because I was like, what the hell does that even mean? It's stocks, bonds, and preferred shares. And I was like, oh, okay, so boring things. Let's move on. Inside, Kevin fell asleep watching The Grinch, and he's woken up by dear Marv and Harry's first attempt to plunder the McAllister house. He starts flipping on all the lights room by room, including the light in the basement by the basement door to the outside, which throws them off because they're like, oh shit, I thought everyone was gone. Apparently not. Nice quick thinking, little Kev. So it scares them off. They hit the snow and beat it. Beat it!
Beat it.
Kate and the rest of the family land in Paris. Kate steals a payphone from an unassuming French woman and calls the police back home in Chicago.
Village Police Department.
Yeah, hi, look, I'm calling from Paris. I have a son who's home alone.
Our phones there are out of order, so I'd like somebody to go over to our house, tell him that we're coming home to get him.
Okay, let me connect you with Family Crisis Intervention.
No, it's not a family crisis.
Hold on. Larry, can you pick up? There's some lady on hold. Sounds kind of hyper.
Y'all, I hate these police dudes. She's transferred to Sergeant Balzac and his donut.
Has he been involved in a household accident?
I don't know. I hope not.
Has the child ingested any poison and or any other object that has become lodged in his throat?
No, he's just home alone.
And I would like somebody to go over to the house and
see that he's all right, just to check on him.
You want us to go to your house just to check on him?
Yes.
Yeah. So as he's taking this call, he's just mowing down on a donut. A piece of this donut falls off and gets stuck on the mouthpiece of the phone. I want to flick it up his nostril so bad. And my dudes, she's being clear and not hysterical because they immediately are like, hysterical woman line one or whatever they say. And I just, if there's one way to piss me off instantly, it's to call a woman hysterical when she's not being hysterical or unreasonable. This is not a hard thing to help her with, okay? And yet they can't wrap their little cop heads around it. The family has also been trying to call the neighbors, really anyone they can, but they're not having any luck. There's the issue of the phone lines being down and it's Christmas time. And listen, these be rich bitches. So apparently everyone leaves their nice fancy homes that they decorated to go elsewhere on Christmas. I don't know. The police finally say they'll go check on Kevin, but he's just avoided being burglarized, which genuinely scared the hell out of him. He's been hiding under a bed. So he doesn't answer the door when this cop comes to check on him. And the cop's like, nobody's home. Blah, blah, blah. And they leave. Good fucking job. This adult woman is telling you that there's a child home alone and all they did was knock on the door. They rang the doorbell. Good job at not doing your job. Okay, so Peter's been trying to book a flight back to Chicago while Kate's been on the phone, but he's not having any luck. Kate comes to find him, fills him in on the police thing, but is super dismayed when he's like, the only available flight is 2 days from now on Friday morning. Peter suggests that they go to his brother's. That's why they've come to Paris, is because his brother is there. And so they're all going to do Christmas in Paris. Damn. Listen, that does sound kind of lovely, but expensive. He suggests to just go back to his brother's. There's nothing more they can do at the airport right now. Everyone's tired, exhausted. Let the kids get some rest and relax, and they can call the police from his brother, so the police have a contact number and actually be able to call them back. Because, again, remember, pre-cell phones, all right? If there was cell phones, was there a cell phone in 1990? I don't know. There was the brick things. It definitely isn't working internationally. So anyways, they're standing at the airline counter with the airport lady as they're discussing this, and she suggests that if Kate wants, she can stay there and get on standby to see if she can get an earlier flight. So Kate decides that she's going to stay at the airport, get on standby while everyone else leaves.
Bells will be ringing the glad, glad news.
Bye. Bye.
Oh, what a Christmas. Bye, to have the blues.
Don't you get lost.
Please come home for Christmas. Please come home for Christmas.
We have reached level 2 of Kevin's Home Alone spectacular. Becoming responsible for himself.
I took a shower washing every body part with Astral soap, including all my major crevices, including in between my toes and in my belly button, which I never did before but sort of enjoyed. I wash my hair with the Don't Formula shampoo and use cream rinse for that just wash shine. I can't seem to find my toothbrush, so I'll pick one up when I go out today. Other than that, I'm in good shape.
Y'all, he says adult formula shampoo. What? Is that what he's... What does that even mean? Now he heads to Buzz's room again, and he starts climbing this wall full of floating shelves that Buzz has just all of his shit on, including the big bad spider's glass cage. He's looking for money, but apparently these shelves can't hold his tiny kid weight because they all come crashing down. And he finds the money he needs, but he also doesn't see that the big bad spider has gotten loose.
It's on the run!
In the house. Okay, across the street at the Murphys, Marv and Harry are burglarizing their house when Peter calls and leaves a message.
Call me in Paris.
You're right! They're gone!
I knew they were.
Silver tuna tonight.
So they decide they're going to go back that night. Harry is real pleased. He's real happy with this. Okay, so Kevin's gone shopping. Dude needs a toothbrush. He hasn't brushed his teeth in a day or two because he can't find it. And he's going to go get a... Any other kid would have just not brushed their fucking teeth. So I love this for him. Anyways, he's at the counter asking if the... asking if the toothbrush he's picked out is approved by the American Dental Association. What a question for an 8-year-old. The older woman behind the counter is baffled by this. She calls for help, and the guy's like, just lie to the kid. Just lie to the kid. As old man Marley comes in, it's a moment. He's got his snow boots on, per usual. He does look intimidating. And he also doesn't say anything. He strides up to the counter, slams his hand down on the glass. This hand is wrapped in white gauze. There's a little bit of blood on it. And he just looks down at Kevin like he's going to eat his soul. He says nothing. He scares the ever-living shite out of this kid. So Kevin gets big scared. He just starts backing up and then runs out of the store, toothbrush still in hand. An employee ends up chasing him out the door, and he sees across the street and screeches, "Shoplifter!" So this cop chases after him. It's a whole thing. Kevin gets away. But as he's walking home, he looks so sullen, and he's kind of whispering to himself, and he says,
I'm a criminal.
Okay, y'all, I gotta admit something here. I might cut this, but I'm gonna say it anyway, for now. In my 33-year-old old age, Marv is kind of cute.
You're sick, you know that? You're really sick.
Not for his brain, and not, and certainly not for his quirks, like the fact that he uses his fucking gum to stick snow globes that he's stolen on the dashboard of their petty crime van. I don't know, he's just sort of handsome in the face at times, in like a Shaggy, if Shaggy was a criminal kind of way from Scooby-Doo, you know? Yeah. Oh, Harry would totally be Scrappy-Doo. Yeah. Anyways, Marv and Harry are rolling down the driveway of the house they just robbed, arguing about how Marv left the water on again. Marv's is their signature, and this is why they're called the Wet Bandits, because he leaves the sinks and such on and stuffs rags down the pipe in the sink and stuff. And he's like, it's our calling card. We're the Wet Bandits. It's so dumb. Because if you get caught, I mean, they automatically will know every house you've hit. don't do this. And this is why Harry's saying that. He's like, Harry hates it. He asked Marv not to do this, but Marv still does it. So they're arguing about this. And as they're arguing, their ugly van is gliding down this driveway. Harry, who's driving, isn't really paying attention. So they don't see Kevin sullenly walking by, and they almost smush him with said shitty van. In this interaction, Kevin recognizes Harry as the cop, the fake cop at his house the night before he disappeared his family. And he becomes suspicious, but they also are suspicious of this kid. So they start following him, which Kevin notices because they're not discreet at all. It's totally noticeable that they're following him. So he doesn't go to his house. Instead, he runs off and ends up hiding in a large nativity scene in front of a church not too far from his house. They lose him. They don't see him. So once they've driven off, he comes out of his little hiding spot and he says, when they come back, I'll be ready. Okay, so later that night, he sets up his fake party in anticipation of them coming back. Y'all, Kevin is a kid genius. I don't even know how to describe this scene very well, so you just gotta watch it for yourself. I'll have to play a clip. Kevin's greatest moments. But yeah, he makes it look like there's a, you know, raging Christmas party happening that night. So when Marv and Harry roll by, they're super confused by what looks to be a roaring party inside and decide they'll try again tomorrow. All right, guys, it's that time. Kevin orders himself a cheese pizza.
Who is it?
It's Little Nero, sir. I have your pizza.
Leave it on the doorstep and get the hell out of here.
Okay. Well, what about the money?
What money?
Well, you have to pay for your pizza, sir.
That a fact? How much do I owe you?
That'll be $11.80, sir.
He slips $12 out the door.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Cheapskate.
Hey, I'm gonna give you to the count of 10 to get your ugly, yellow, no good keister off my property before I pump your guts full of lead. 1, 2, 10.
Sweet baby Satan, Kev, you didn't need to do him like that. Make him see God just to get your cheese pizza. Back at the Paris airport, Kate is bartering with an older couple to switch flights with her. The flight they are about to board to, I don't even know where, but it's in the States for her Friday morning flight. And after some haggling and lots of Kate giving her jewelry away, along with some cash, they give in. All right, Kevin has now reached level 3 of being home alone, loneliness. He's watching TV in his parents' bed where he's been sleeping, and he looks so stinking sad as he pulls out a family photo from under a pillow. He gives it a little smooch goodnight, and he stuffs it back under the pillow and then turns out the light.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know.
All right, so dear Kevin goes grocery shopping. He needs some essentials. Laundry soap, milk, little green army men.
For the kids.
So when he gets to the checkout counter, the clerk is immediately suspicious. Listen, like I said before, he's short. He's a little pipsqueak. He's adorable. He's a tiny little adorable Macaulay Culkin playing Kevin. But yes, so when he rolls up with he just has like the big ass shopping cart. It's not even a basket. He has the actual full on shopping cart. If she wasn't suspicious and trying to ask leading questions to figure out why this kid is alone, I would be upset. But I also used to find this annoying when I was also a kid, you know? But now, yeah, this tracks. Sally here, it says it on her name tag, tries to throw in some questions as she brings them up. But he's got a quick and decent answer for every single one of them. Because he's Kevin McAllister. At home, Kevin is doing his best, trying to do the laundry. Like, he's not doing the best job with this. But you know what? Again, any other kid, a lot of other kids, not any other kid, but a lot of other kids wouldn't have done their laundry at all. He's trying to do his laundry again when the furnace starts to act up. Okay, so yeah, it's just his imagination and his fear of the basement. And he's getting over this fear in this moment, evolving, if you will. But what I really wanted to point out was I never noticed until I watched this with the subtitles on that he is imagining this thing, the furnace, saying to him, "Hello, Kevin," as its great face thing slides up and down. It's so obvious now, but y'all, this is life with ADHD. Anyways, Harry and Marv decide to check the house out during the day, confused by the home's random bouts of activity. Kev's doing the dishes. Again, I love that he's just taking charge of cleaning up after himself. Go, Kev. Marv comes up to the back door, which is right near the kitchen sink, okay? So Kevin, ever the quick-thinking fellow, grabs the firecrackers that he had stolen from Buzz's room for later use.
Cool, firecrackers. I'll save these for later.
And uses the Angels with Filthy Souls movie to scare the shit out of Marv and dissuade them from breaking in. Marv is listening outside the window like this is really happening. Oh, Marv. Kev is miming maniacally laughing as Marv runs back to the van scared. So Marv reports back to Harry that someone named Snakes just got shot up. And Harry is like, okay, actually, I think we should stick around and see who comes out of the house. So if we ever get fingered for a murder in this neighborhood, we can shift the blame away from us with this info. So that's what they do. They continue to stake out. Okay, back with Kate. She's in, I don't know where. At this point, she doesn't even know. Trying to get a flight to Chicago. She's back in the States. We know that, at least. But it's Christmas Eve, and there's nothing. This is where she meets John Candy. I mean, Gus. Okay. Gus, the polka king of the Midwest.
Allow me to introduce myself. Gus Polinski. How are you? Polka king of the Midwest. The Kenosha Kickers.
Hi there.
How are you? No? That's okay. I thought you might have recognized. Anyways, I had a few hits a few years ago. That's why, just polka, polka, polka. Polka, polka, polka. No? Twin Lakes Polka, Damavuji Polka, a.k.a. Kiss Me Polka, Polka Twist.
Well, these are songs.
Yeah.
I love them so much. Basically, he offers her a ride with him and his polka band buddies. Their flight to Milwaukee was canceled, so they're renting a van. Turns out to be a budget moving van to drive home. And he says it would be no problem to drop her off in Chicago. It's a small role, but seeing John, it just brings me so much joy. And it's, to me, it's just a special element of this film, especially because John Candy, he's no longer with us. I also love that even though he doesn't have any direct scenes with Macaulay Culkin in this movie, they did Uncle Buck together, which they do. And I don't know when, but I will do Uncle Buck eventually. I haven't been able to bring myself to watch that movie in a very long time. It's one of my very big attachments. I have it on DVD. I've had it forever. We'll see. But anyways, it's on the list. At the McAllister house, Kevin's, he finally leaves the house to cut down a Christmas tree. It's still Christmas Eve. And he's just cutting out a tree from their yard. It's a cute tree. It's not too small, but it's not big. It's Kevin's size. Harry and Marv are still staking out the house. They did fall asleep. They're both snoring in the front seat of this fucking van, but they wake up in time to see him cutting down the tree.
Marv, huh? Look at this. I think we're getting scammed by a kindergarten.
Inside, Kevin is decorating his little tree, his little Kevin tree, when he catches a glimpse of these two buffoons peeping through the window behind him by way of a Christmas ornament. So they finally figured out that Kevin is home alone, and it's just been this kid this whole time. He overhears them planning to come back at 9 p.m. Okay, so Harry, he is dead set on robbing this house. He's not giving up on it because he says this is the only reason he came to the street and started casing the streets, because he wanted to hit this house. It means a lot to him. Okay, so he's not giving up on it. Marv is even like, you want to come back here with the kid? And Harry's like, yeah, I don't give a fuck. We're coming back tonight, 9 p.m. And Kevin overhears this. Okay, so we get this scene of Kevin going to see Santa. And as he's walking home, he hears singing from inside the church that he hid in front of. And he decides to go in. Inside, he takes a seat. The choir seems to be practicing because the church is nearly empty. So I just kind of assume that it's some sort of choir practice for perhaps the next day. I don't know. And again, yeah, the church is just about empty, except for old man Marley, who happens to also be there. Marley sees Kevin and finally speaks.
Merry Christmas. May I sit down?
Kevin's little, huh, cracks me up, just the way, and the look on his face, huh, I don't know. So Marley, he sits down next to him and he starts telling Kevin that his granddaughter is in the choir. Then he says,
I can't come and hear her tonight.
You have plans?
No. I'm not welcome.
At church?
Oh, you're always welcome at church. I'm not welcome with my son. Years back, before you and your family moved on the block. I had an argument with my son.
How old is he?
He's grown up. We lost our tempers, and I said I didn't care to see him anymore. He said the same. We haven't spoken to each other since.
If you miss him, why don't you call him?
I'm afraid if I call him, he won't talk to me.
How do you know?
I don't know. I'm just afraid he won't.
Guys, this conversation is so important, and it just gives, in a way, it kind of speaks to how our experiences as children between our parents can later in life result in a severing of a bond and full communication. And we don't know the full story of what happened between Marley and his son. We just know that they don't speak anymore. Good old Kevin here. I love this. No filter to be had in his kid body says, "Aren't you a little old to be afraid?" And then Marley responds,
"You can be a little old for a lot of things. You're never too old to be afraid."
So it just reminds me of, I guess, like another version of Kevin's plight, because, you know, he's struggling with his own family and being heard in his 8-year-old experience thus far in life. And if it continues with that trend, I mean, what do you think it's going to look like when they're older? It could be a Marley and his son situation. And that's really fucking sad. Listen, at any point in our life, there's probably some work we need to do on ourselves. And when we do that work on ourselves, that translates to our relationships with the people around us and how strong they are, or, you know, how we've harmed them or they have harmed us, and breaking vicious cycles, especially within the family. And it's just the way that Marley treats Kevin here. So, for example, Kevin starts telling him how he was afraid of the basement for years. And Marley, he's so great here because he doesn't invalidate Kevin just because it's a kid fear. You know, it's a very different, what they're experiencing right now is a very different thing. I mean, aside from the whole home alone thing, but the problems with their families, right? And I feel like it's so common to see adults dismiss something that's very real and a very big experience for a child, like his fear of the basement, just because in their adult mind, they find it insignificant. But for Kevin, it's significant. He's only 8 years old, you know? That difference shouldn't be disregarded just because of your difference in experience and age. And I really hate when adults do that to children, when they mishandle that. It's crushing. And that, it, our formative years, your brain and your body's literally developing. How you're treated as a child directly correlates to how you are as an adult. And I hate when that's dismissed. So anyways, my long-winded point is, I love that Marley doesn't do that to Kevin here. He listens to Kevin. And I think that's really what Kevin needed, was to be actively listened to and not be shoved off just because he's a kid. Anyways, by Kevin telling Marley all about how he faced his basement fear and kind of, you know, he's getting over it. I don't know if he's fully gotten over it, but he's reached a new point with it, you know? He's starting to convince Marley to at least consider calling his son. You can see this kind of shift happen in Marley where he's like, maybe I should be the one to call. Maybe I should just do it. Okay, we have reached level 4 of being home alone. Hope and survival.
This is my house. I have to defend it.
Okay, so after he leaves the church, he's racing home and he busts through the front door. And y'all, this is one thing I didn't notice before either, that front door was not locked. There was not a second where he stopped to unlock it. No key was pulled out of a pocket and slid into that fucking door. It was just unlocked. Lock the fucking door. Also, when he goes inside and slams it shut, he only puts the security lock on, the chain. And I'm like, no, Kevin, lock the entire door. Kevin, he has this blueprint plan for all of his traps. It's like in crayon or some shit. I love it. And he starts to lay out all of his little traps. In record time, like an hour, maybe, he sets up everything, which is not realistic. But, you know, we're just going to suspend that annoyance for now because it's fine. It's a movie and we're here to enjoy it, right? Instead of doing a play-by-play for all of the shit that happens in Kevin's funhouse to Buffoon 1 and Buffoon 2, Marv and Harry, I'm going to give you a little bit of a list here. Okay. All right. Kevin's funhouse starts for Dear Marv and Harry at the back door. Harry gets a BB gunshot to the crotch.
Be a good little fella now and open the door.
Marv gets a BB gunshot to the forehead. They split up. Harry slips on the extra icy front steps and falls hard on his back twice. Marv slips on the ice rinkified stairs to the basement entrance. Marv gets knocked in the face and seared with a hot iron. Harry's palm gets burned and branded with a hot, hot, hot front doorknob with the letter M on it. That M will be on his fucking burglary little hand forever.
Where are you?
M for Mary. Burn, miss. Mary, I fucked up, miss. I don't know. Maybe the M is upside down. It's for Wet Bandit. At Kevin's Christmas Funhouse. Marv tries to work his way up the basement steps. Inside, steps on a nail. These stairs are also covered in tar. Harry's head is set on fire with a big-ass blowtorch. Harry gets turned into a chicken.
Harry? Why the hell did you take your shoes off? Why the hell you dressed like a chicken?
Marv steps on broken ornament shards barefoot after the nail in the foot. So, real quick, Marv, he can't get up the basement stairs into the inside of the house, right? So he goes back out the stairs to the basement door and up the stairs to the outside, right? And when he circles around to go through that window, the tar on his feet is basically all gone. And there was a lot of tar on his feet. And I'm sorry, but I don't think the snow would have just taken it off. I could be wrong there, but I was like, little film magic faux pas, my dears. Anyways, so again, Marv steps on the broken ornament shards barefoot after the nail in the foot.
Ah! I'm gonna kill that kid!
They both fall and eat shit on a sea of toy cars.
You guys give up or you're thirsty for more?
They both get hit in the head face first, actually, with paint cans.
Heads up!
Don't worry, Marv, I'll get him for you.
Okay, we're not done. I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna step out of list land and go back to into recap. After all this, Kevin finally calls 911, giving them address for, I think, across the street to the Murphys. And he's trying to sound like an adult, but he just sounds ridiculous. He's kind of muffling his voice as if he's older. How anyone falls for this, I don't know. But again, we're just not going to think about it right now. Then he heads for the stairs to the attic room as Harry and Marv make it up the stairs and they spill over this tripwire he has set up in the hall. Okay, so y'all, the big bad spider's coming out to play here. Its part has arrived. And I cannot look at it. I cannot look at it because you get some closer shots of this motherfucker and it's not for me. But Marv's scream is spectacular. Okay, so when Marv went over the tripwire in the hallway, he got a hold of Kevin's ankle at the bottom of the stairs up into the attic room. Marv is tall as hell with long arms, and the big bad spider was on the way to the attic too. So Kevin straight picks up this thing, gentle I might add, and puts it on Marv's face, hence the scream. Kevin ziplines from the attic window to his treehouse. And now Marv and Harry attempt to follow him via said homemade zipline.
Down here, you big horse's ass! Come and get me before I call the police!
Let's get him! Wait. It's just what he wants us to do. It's to go back downstairs through his funhouse so we get all tore up. He's gonna call the cops! He's not calling it from a treehouse!
But Kevin's got some big-ass garden shears in his little treehouse and gives the rope on his zipline a little snippy snip. They fall hard. They eat shit. They eat snow. And Kevin, he climbs down from his treehouse and he starts to run for the neighbors where he's directed the cops to. He runs through the basement to the neighbor's house, which is flooded because of Marv's whole Wet Bandit shtick. And Kevin assumes that they're going to follow him through the basement, but they don't. They go through the front door and meet him inside the house as he comes up the basement steps into the kitchen. So they do catch him for a moment here. But it's old man Marley to the rescue. He must have been out shoveling and salting, as he does, because he slams them over the back of the head with his shovel. His snow shovel.
What are you going to do to him, Harry?
I'll do exactly what he did to us. And I'll burn his head with a blowtorch.
Go ahead, smash his face with an iron.
Like to slap him right in the face with a paint can, maybe.
Or shove a nail through his foot.
First thing I'm going to do is bite off every one of these little fingers, one at a time.
The cops arrive and arrest him, and Kevin watches from across the street. Marley took him home. No questions asked, I guess.
Hey, you know, we've been looking for you two guys for a long time.
Yeah. But remember, we're the Wet Bandits. Wet Bandits.
And Shut up!
So yeah, they have been arrested. Kevin, he must have cleaned up the entire house because the only evidence his parents will find of this going down is Harry's missing gold tooth, which I don't think I mentioned at all before. But yeah, Harry has a gold tooth that goes missing. It flies out of his mouth when he's hit in the face with a paint can. So Kevin, you know, after all of this, he apparently cleans up the house in record time as well. Damn. And then he finishes setting up for Christmas. He hung the stockings with care. He put out milk and cookies. We see a clip of Kate talking to Gus that night as they are on their last leg of their drive. And Gus is trying to make her feel better about getting forgetting Kevin, but it's not helping.
And tell me, have you ever gone on vacation and left your child home?
No. No. But I did leave one at a funeral parlor once. Yeah, it was terrible, too. You know, I was all distraught and everything, you know, the wife and I. We left the little tyke there in the funeral parlor all day. All day. You know, when we went back at night when we came to our senses, and there he was. Apparently he was there alone all day with a corpse. Now, he was okay, you know, after 6-7 weeks. And I came around, started talking again. But he's okay. You know, they get over it. Kids are resilient like that.
Maybe we shouldn't talk about this.
Well, you brought it up. I was just, trying to cheer you up.
I'm sorry I did.
God, I love him. And these two, iconic. It's Christmas morning. Kevin wakes up hoping against all hope. His family is back. He's undisappeared them, but he's still alone. Sadder than ever, Kevin seems to resign himself to a lonely home alone Christmas when he hears the front door open. And his name being called out.
Kevin! Kevin! Merry Christmas, sweetheart. Oh, Kevin, I'm so sorry.
There's a moment of pause here between Kevin and Kate, and it just kind of snags my heart so hard because she kind of is unsure. You can tell she's kind of unsure about how Kevin feels towards her in this moment. And there's just a few split seconds where, you know, there's a pause in the air between them. And then this big smile breaks out over his face and he runs to her and Lord, it's a heart wrencher. And the snow, y'all, that's one of my favorite things about this scene is there's so much beautiful snow coming down outside. Listen, we get snow in Washington, but in Western Washington, we don't get snow like that. Sincerely, I am jealous. Kevin is asking where everyone else is, and just as Kate is saying they couldn't make it, they do.
Where's everybody else?
Oh, maybe they couldn't come. They wanted to so much.
No, I didn't fall asleep in back of the cabin, Jewel, all of you, did I?
You do, Jewel!
I spit!
Shut up!
Come on, you're married, it's Christmas! Kevin! Kevin! How are you?
Oh, it's good to see you.
Ah, you're all right.
I love you. You okay?
Hey, Kev. It's pretty cool that you didn't burn the place down.
Thanks, Buzz.
Before the movie ends, Kevin catches a glimpse of old man Marley outside on the sidewalk reuniting with his son and his son's family. As Marley's swooping his granddaughter up in a big hug with the snow coming down, but again, the score for this movie, makes this scene even so much better. Marley sees Kevin smiling at the scene in the snow from the window, and he waves at him, giving him a little small, grateful smile in return. The end. Home Alone. This was a really fun recap. Happy holidays, you guys. Whatever you celebrate, if you do or you don't, my best wishes to you. I really hope you enjoyed this revisit, my recap here. I kind of wish I had more time to do Home Alone 2, but maybe next year, you know? Again, all of my show notes or references will be in the show notes if you'd like to check those out. For my next episode, I'm doing Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It is a John Candy film. It is a Steve Martin film. I love that movie. It guts me. It sticks something straight through my heart because it is one of my big attachments. So it's going to be a difficult revisit, but a good one at the same time. And I have not fully decided if I want to get into a little bit of John Candy's life, but I might. It seems fitting, especially for that film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. If you haven't seen that, I would recommend giving it a watch for sure. That movie, the spirit of that movie just assaults my emotional senses. So in a good way though. But anyways, look out for the trailer for that after my outro music. And as always, thanks for being here. Don't forget to give the show a follow, a like, so you can get a cute little alert. My next episode is available. Please like, share, review kindly, all those things. And I appreciate you being here. Merry Christmas, you filthy animals. Bye.
Kevin! What did you do to my room?
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
During holiday travel, some people get delirious. Some get delayed. And some get Del Griffin.
American light and fixture, director of sales, shower curtain ring division.
Neil Page got all three.
I was on my way home to spend a nice holiday with my family. Instead, I'm in a motel bed with a stranger.
So instead of Thanksgiving with his family, he's spending 3 days with the turkey.
Two happy clams just whistling down the road.
Flintstones, meet the Flintstones, they're the modern Tonic family.
Paramount Pictures presents
Wilma!
Steve Martin.
Ever been to Hawaii?
Yeah.
You see Don Ho while you were there?
See the second show, that's the best one.
Is that right?
Yeah.
John Candy.
Why are you holding my hand? Where's your other hand? Between two pillows. Those aren't pillows.
In a new film by John Hughes. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
See that Bears game last week?
Yeah, hell of a game.